Accession number 30636, Mr. Malcolm Barker, Reel 12. Now, anything else you remember about your time? Well, it's 10 years or so you're with them. Any other exercise?
Yes, no, not exercising, but we did have a dinner, a squadron dinner. And the guest of honour was the Queen Mother. The wife again was invited up there, my daughter, all the family, all the regimental silver was laid out, and she came in. We had armed guards inside and outside, and I stood along the passageway with a lance, and as the Queen Mother come by speaking to us all, and we gets inside, sits down for a meal, and one of her escorts came up and whispered to her and said something to her. So our mate Duxbury banged the table. She said, Her Majesty Queen Mother would have something to say. So she stood up. She said, sorry to interrupt such a lovely meal and company, she said, but I'm afraid there is an IRA red alert that they have planted a bomb or a satchel or bomb or an item in a TA centre. But they don't say which TA centre. She said, as far as I'm concerned, I would like to stay and have my meal and meet my guest and unit, she said. Then I shall go home, she said. I don't know how you all feel, so we all stood up and clapped. But the main was saying we'd done Brecon Beacon, we'd done map reading, and that was about mainly it. But our main concern was in England. We was taken around, shown us water supply units, how we would defend them, underground bunkers, fuel, nuclear stations, power stations and that, and how we would discuss how we would defend them, and that was the main.
Now, how did you come to leave them?
I think it was age again, because they shut it down with age again, Peter. Yeah.
And when did you leave them?
Well, before that, talking about standby for the first Gulf.
Tell me about that.
We was at the Intercourt, and there was all this buzz about the Gulf with the Americans and all that, and we may be called on to go to the Gulf. So we thought, all right. They sent a letter round stating, would you be prepared to go if you are called? Being a TA, you're already paid to do your job, and that was part of your job. So I said to Molly, what about it? She said, well, it's up to you. So out of the 30 we had with us, I should say 20 said yes. The other 10 said no. So come to the drill night, Captain Duxbury came there and he says, very disappointed, gentlemen. So we said, well, what's up, sir? He said, I've got 20 who I knew would sign the paper, he said. And I'm very surprised amongst the 10 that didn't was some that I thought would sign. He said, so, gentlemen, if you're not prepared to go stand by for the Gulf, then you shouldn't be in the TA, because that is what you'll pay the yearly bounty for. So he said, I would expect your resignations. He said, you go home, tell your wives, come back for, what can I say? I don't know what the time you're going to be called for and all that. He said, we'll be going to Woolwich Barracks, and the other one will be going to Bryce Norton, split the two groups up. We went with the artillery down to Woolwich Barracks. He said, our job will be to go out there and guard prisoners, because there is a dispute between the guards that they shouldn't be prison wardens, they're fighting troops, number one fighting troops. So, goes down Woolwich Barracks. A lot have already gone.
You went to Woolwich Barracks?
Yeah, Woolwich Barracks. A lot had already gone out to the Gulf with rockets, guns, mobile guns and everything. And we moved in. The funny part was, as we moved in, a lot of people had gone away for the weekend. So we set ourselves up in the barracks and in the guardhouse. The battery sergeant major was still there. So he overseed us, told us what was it. where to patrol the perimeter, where to patrol round the outside. I don't know if this was April time. I know it was cold and there was ice on the, what's the name? So we're patrolling round here. And they said, guards go out, come back. And we, Noddy Holder, that's it. We had a lieutenant called Holder. We called him Noddy because we knew ex-power. And he thought we was all too old. We should have been put in wheelchairs and Zimmer frames a long time ago. So Corporal Callow, he had done three tours of Northern Ireland. He was our guard commander. One or two others there. And he said, right, you're going out on patrol. And like again, senior ones had live ammunition and the junior lads had nothing. They just had a rifle bank. You'll patrol this area round and round and round. In between time, the soldiers that had been on weekend leave were coming back to camp. A lot of them wound up in the cells because they had no ID card. They was coming through the gate saying, good, hello mate, how are you? Who are you? ID, no ID, straight inside. So I goes out patrolling with the corporal. So, as we get halfway round the camp, over the back, there was a small wooden gate with barbed wire over the top. So I heard it. We heard this noise, so the corporal said to me, somebody outside's trying to get in. And we heard this voice say, go on, you can get over it. You can get over the fence. Mind the barbed wire. And we went to ground. Although it was cold, we went to ground. So the corporal said to me, grab the first one, Mel, he said. We'll leave that to you. And I had this young lad with me. I said, he got halfway over the fence and he got stuck on barbed wire. So the corporal said, now. So we grabbed him and pulled him down, ripped some of his coat, laid him on the floor, face downwards, put a rifle in his back. And I said, we are British troops. We are armed. Please do not make a move as we have live ammunition. So they put his arm behind his back and we kind of handcuffed him and told him to keep quiet. So his mate saying, you all right, you all right. So he comes over the top, and as he comes over, the others grabbed him. So the report go, guard commander, two intruders, right-hand side, gate number 7. So out comes the squad, take them back. And it turned out afterwards they were two junior officers. And apparently they've used this route to get into the camp 4 or 5 times. Been out too late, didn't come. Of course, the battery sergeant major there, and he was fuming. So we got commended for that. We're standing by, and they said, there's still no news about us going out. So we do Sunday morning on the gates. Troops are coming in. Battery sergeant major stood by the gate, back a bit, watched his troops come in. No IDs on them, because they've been going away. Knew the guard, knew the people, and we stood there. So, same again, the bloke says, who are you? We said, Special Forces. Of course, we had no badges on, just comfort caps and that. And blimey, they said, you look wary. So we got them up against the wall, guard, commander come out, Corporal Callow come out, took them away again. And the other corporal with us was John Sabini. He'd been in Ireland, wore green jackets. So we were on the gate guard. Up comes this chap. Same, no disrespect, but same hairstyle, you know, baldian type. Got a little briefcase. Morning, chaps. I said, excuse me, sir. I said, where do you think you're going? He said, I'm going into camp. He said, I'm the chaplain. I said, I'm sorry, I don't know you. He said, and I don't know you. He said, how dare you talk to me like that? So the battery sergeant major is over there and he's going, oh, my God. So I said, have you any ID on you, sir? No. Can I search your case? No. I said, well, as far as I'm concerned, you don't enter this camp. Little Titch was standing with me, and John Sabini was standing there, and he's nodding his head. So I said, you're not entering this camp. The main gate was shut, and the little side gate to come in. Go on. I said, you'll have to leave and get ID. I'll report you, he said. So I said, well, that's all right. You report me. So He goes away, comes back with this tattered old ID card, and it must have been about 20 years out of date. So he's humming and arming. I said, may I ask? No, guard commander. So over comes Corporal Sabini. What's the trouble, guard? I said, this gentleman's being a bit awkward. The ID card looks like it's about 20 years old. He will not open his case. What's the idea of this? I said, more than I'll dare do is let you in. So Tit said, yeah, I agree with that. He said, so I said, what happens if you, in that case, you had explosive? You went down to the church, family's going into church, and you let this off. I would be responsible, and it would live with me for the rest of my life. And a battery sergeant major's going out there shaking his head. Of course, they took him in, and what's that? We spent about 4 days down there. Then we was told, thank you for your services, commending us for the duty we'd done. And the battery sergeant major came over while we was lined up outside. He said, I want to thank you, he said, for an excellent job you did. Although you wasn't required for the Gulf, I think you've done a better job here with the IRA alert, because you was on a yellow one day, red another. He said, and your vote in my eyes to the pitfalls. He said, no, I'm afraid my men are in for tightening up. And when we got back to the Inns of Court, we was recommended for a citation. And one of the officers who was a lawyer, academic qualifications made him an officer, said, I don't agree with that. They was doing a job and I was paid for it. So Major Duxbury had a go at him. So he calls me into the office, severely reprimands me for my behaviour. I said, well, in that case then, sir, you don't want people to act as soldiers. You just want puppets, I said. And therefore, I'm sorry, I said, I'll put my resignation in the next day. So he said, well, that's up to you. So when I come out, I said to Sergeant Callow about it. Oh, in that case, he said, I'm going in. And he went in. John Sabini went in, and about half a dozen blokes said, you can have our resignation, sir. We was acting as soldiers, not toy boss names. And that went off. Then eventually they disbanded that unit, Peter.
So that was, and when was that disbanded then?
Not long after the Gulf.
So about 91 to 92.
Yeah.
Now, the other things we did, last things we do, are, could you tell us about your membership of the British Legion and what you do for them? Because I know, and then we'll do the Korean veterans, war veterans. Tell me about the British Legion then.
I came out of the force, I'd been out some time, and went on to one or two veterans parades, like up Whitehall and round that way, and bloke says to me, you're ex-service, aren't you? So I said, yes. So he said, ever thought of joining the Legion? I said, no. I said, it's a drinking club. I said, no, I'm not. No, no. He said, we do other things by drinking. So he explained to me they do welfare, poppy collecting, blah, blah, blah. So I said, oh. And they had an embarking and a clubhouse. Went up there one day. And
about when would this be, roughly?
Oh, that was 1994. And, before that.
Before that, because you were wearing the badge when Princess Anne saw you.
That's right, yeah. So, oh, well, date's gone. So, I wasn't as active then, but what's name? So, joined the Legion, membership, what's name, ex-service, papers. Showed up one night and they said, we're short of a deputy standard bearer. Are you interested, Malcolm? So I said, well, I don't know. We're also short of welfare officers. Are you interested? Hospital visitors. Because they couldn't get people to come forward to take these jobs. So I said, well, I'm working shift work. I said, that makes a lot of difference. So I said, I'll do deputy standard bearer. So you went to a standard bearer school where they trained you to how to use the standard, carry it, slope it, dip standards, standards marching, standards halting, dip for wet and muddy weather, that's halfway down, royal salute, all different movements for the standard. Being ex-service, you already know the marching. So I'm indoors one morning, Saturday morning, knock, knock on the door, standard bearer comes round. He says to me, Now, as the standard, as the gauntlet, as the sling. Have you got a Legion badge? I said, no, I've just got my regimental badge I've come out with. What I'll have to do, he said, you're doing the mayor's inauguration in Barking on Sunday. I said, why? He said, I fell out with a deputy standard bearer. You're number two, so you've got it. I said, but I don't know what to do. He said, well, just play it by ears. He said, I'll be down the club if you want me. So I thought, myself, oh. So of course, Molly laughed, cleaned everything. Everything was filthy, so I cleaned it all up. Arrived at the Barking Town Hall. And I said to the Prime Marshal, look, I said, this was dumped on me Saturday morning. I said, all right, he said, there's one or two other just joined in. So I joined in, and from there on, I went into competitions. I got to the county standard bearer, went in for the metropolitan area, and I lost it by half a point. That's on dress, drill, standard, sling, gauntlets, gloves, and that was that.
Is it hard work, lifter? I mean, is it?
Yeah, it's quite a nifty, wasn't it? Especially because you're out in all weathers and wind, and all you wear is a dark blue suit. You wasn't allowed to wear a Mac. They did bring out at one time a plastic Pacamac. They said you could wear it. But when you went on parade, if the parade marshal says you don't wear it, you don't wear it. And this has been our argument for about 30 odd years now about dress. We ask for capes, and it's mainly just a dark blue suit. Well, I had a dark blue suit, but that worn. And I approached the branch. I said, if you want me to carry on doing the drill as standard, then you buy me a suit. So they said to me, go to Marks and Spencer's, which we used to get all the suits from, and got a suit there, put the bill in, and they refurbished you. So it comes to...
How many times do you have to do it? When do you do it?
Mainly, like the mayor's inauguration, when there's a parade, which... You could get 5 or 6 parades in a year. When you went to National Conference, which was once a year. The County Conference, which was once a year. And whenever you call for a funeral, then you put a black drape on and go to the funeral. And you do a guard of honour with the coffin into the church or cremation. If it's a burial, you stand at the graveside and when they read the exhortation out, you dip the standard. With a cremation, you're inside the church. When he says, we commit John Smith's body and the curtains close, then you dip. And I won't say it's the funniest part, but it was a bit embarrassing. We're standing in this crematorium. Unbeknown to us, because we didn't see a service sheet. This is just recently. This didn't see a service sheet. The woman requested that the curtains only half close. So you hear the motor whirling and the closed curtains going. You hear the extra, so you dip. When we look at each other, the curtains hadn't closed because that had, what's the name? So then you go outside, you stand outside with the standard. As the people come out, they look at the flowers. You get dismissed because there's normally one bloke, an officer of the branch here, who does the exaltation, and that's it. Then after that, they were short on welfare officers and hospital
visitors. Tell me about the role of welfare officer and hospital visitors.
Welfare officer, you used to get a call or with a secretary. Molly would tell you, I'd be having my meal, just got home from work. There's somebody in need, want somebody to go round. And you had to fill in, which I don't agree with, was like a means test form. You had to know what they've got in the bank, whether they've got premium bonds, what pensions they got, what money they spent on clothing, food, washing up the liquid. The women were allowed so much for personal clothing, the men were allowed so much. And this all be filled in, then sent away to metropolitan area, which would then send it away to national, which when it come back, and it took time. To begin with, we had petty cash. So if somebody was in dire straits, we could take £30 out, get a chit signed. And what's that? At Christmas time, we would send out cheques for Christmas. Well, embarrassing to us, up in Blackpool, one committee was sending out these Christmas what's names. It was in the papers and everything. You always get bad news when it happens to the Legion, but you never hear the good work. This committee was pre-signing cheques and sending them out. Well, there was a bank manager up there. They sent him a £50 cheque. regular. He sent back, he said, I don't need it. Took no notice. And he wrote away to the headquarters and said, look, I'm a ex-bank manager. I don't need the money. Please don't send it. And apparently, one, you change committee's form. And they had all these pre-signed checks. And they were sending them to each other, believe it or not. So what we had to do as welfare committees, everything blew up and there were thousands of pounds. A couple of them got 6 months in prison, defrauded. We had to go round to each branch and say, can I see your checkbooks? One branch locally, I won't mention it. The chairman went on holiday and he'd signed 10 checks, blank checks, signed them because you had to have a chairman's signature, the welfare signature. And it was 10 checks. So they could have been made out to anybody. And what's that? So we had to take them away. Then you wasn't allowed to give money. So you went round, you said, oh, somebody would say, oh, my cooker's busted. I need a new cooker. So you go round there. You estimate, Molly used to come out as well. Go out with Ivy, who was our secretary. She's passed on there. Go to a place and say, a good place, a second-hand reconditioned cooker. You get 2 to 3, what's the name, you know, statements, and you get it installed by them and all that business. Well, we was visiting a bloke in Barking, up by Upney Station. When I walked in there, it was filthy, dirty, cobwebs. It smelt of urinal. There was empty bottles. He was a boozer. And he had a lady friend, came from Wolverstone. You know, they wanted to know how much money they can get. So we said, well, we don't do much. What good's the bloody Legion? Filthy bed, filthy clothes. I said, we can get you a new bed, we can get you clothing, we can get you, and with food. No, I don't want that. So we start taking details, because you take details, his name, when he was in, and he had these medals. Well, the medals didn't correspond with what his duty, you know, when he served in the forces. And all they was interested in was money for booze. What could So, when you come back, you write a comment. Well, this man was in a state, could need with new curtains. So when we talked to the warden about it, because it was a complex, he said, this is the third place he's been in, and he's been thrown out of everyone for abuse, drinking. So we wrote that when I got back. But as we was coming out, we went into the warden's place, and she wasn't there, but there was a flat across the road from the warden, and this woman said, waiting for the warden. So we said, yes. She said, she got out, she'd be a bit of a time. So we said, all right. Would you like to come in and have a cup of tea? What are you doing? I told the Legion. When I went in, there was a bed like this with a chap laying on it. So I said, hello, Pop, how are you? Not too bad. He said, not all that good, he says. So Ivy went out with her making a cup of tea. This woman only had one burner on the cooker. She said, oh, sorry. So Ivy said, well, Trevor thought, no. We've never had any help from him. So I'm talking about this bloke. He was a Royal Marine, served at Narvik during that combat. Got liver cancer. So I said, hello, man. Come here. I said, how'd you go on for changing the bed and all that? She said, well, that one goes in, she said, and the other one comes out the drawer. I said, have you got anything to spare? No, nobody's ever helped us. I said, I understand your cooker's a bit dodgy. Because you show your ID and all that business. So, what's that? So we went back, motor report. She got new cooker, curtains, a new chair, a new bed, new clothing, and everything. And she was over the moon. She asked to go back there. She presented Ivy with a box of chocolates. We said, we don't need it. That's what we're. She said, you know what, son? She said, don't mind me calling you son. I said, it's the first time I've had any help from anybody. I said, well, that's what we're here for, and that's what we do the puppy collecting for. So that went on.
Now, what about the hospital visiting?
Well, I've been doing that just recently. We've lost two people.
What exactly did you do? I mean,
you say to the family, like Vic, he was a member of our branch. We say, called his wife up, knowing him, you know, you find out he's in hospital. I said, is it all right if we go up, me and Molly go up and visit him, give you a break? Oh, love that. He'd love to see you go up there. You know the bloke's ill. You have a little chat with him. You try to cheer him up. And because Vic loved his bike ride, he fell off his bike a couple of times. And he was gradually going down. So I said, oh, I do miss my bike. I said, well, if you get out of here, Vic, we're going to get you a 3-wheel bike. going to put a little basket on the front, a little basket on the back, put your bets in, go shopping. And he was looking forward to that, but unfortunately he slipped away. You go up there and say, anything you need? You need magazines? At Christmas time, if they're in there, we take them, if it's possible, some sweets, orange juice and all that business. And that is mainly phone the family up and say, is there anything we can do for you and that.
Now, tell me about the poppy collection. How important is that? What part do you play in that?
I and Molly were collectors. We've just received our 35-year badge. It's a medal, it is, for 35 years collecting. It started off, like, Lil next door, she's nearly 90. Her and her husband were the poppy collectors. We need help. I said I couldn't stand there with a tin. I felt embarrassed. So we got involved with that. I go up to the embankment every year, stand up there on and off for a fortnight. I don't do every day because of my condition, but stand there. And you stand there with your poppy tray, your berry on, and people come up, chat to you, give poppies. Some give you money, some don't take a poppy, others take poppies. We have wooden crosses. If they need a wreath, we can get a wreath for them. And over the last 2 years, I've took near enough £2,000 for me. Time spent, what's that?
Is the money going up or down in your branch?
It's gone up. Gone up. We're a small branch and we average 11 collectors. Some of them are going there. But we always average around £22,000 over the fortnight because we have a shop in Barking Town Centre given free of charge. But we have to take a £3 million insurance out through the Legion to cover us for personal injuries and that. And as I say, I stand at the embankment station, we get permission to collect there. I have a card and that allows me to go and collect. And I think this year we're somewhere around about £26 million overall, and that goes for rest homes.
That's nationally.
Yeah, nationally. That goes for rest homes, updating rest homes under the EEC, fitting new toilets, rest and recuperation, transport there, transport back, and that all comes out. Plus the top management get paid for what they do, but we are volunteers.
Now what about, you said it was a boozers club, that's the, now do you have a headquarters and you've got a shop you mentioned, but do you have a premises?
We did officially, but we lost it because of, we got the wrong element came in and we wound up £63,000 in debt, and me and the wife and some of the others stepped down off the committee because we could see what way it was going, and we are responsible if for the loss of any, what's name? So we was the trustees. Now, the only bloke that we resigned, we had that in writing. Now, the only bloke that was going to lose his home was Michael Davis. He's our president and treasurer. And he was going to lose it because he was the only one left on the committee that was responsible. The other people had signed all their assets over to their wives, so it couldn't be touched. And we lost 63,000, we had to shut it down. But we meet regular now in St Margaret's Church. We have a first Tuesday a month executive, second Tuesday a month branch meetings. We run socials, quiz nights, St George's Day, Christmas parties. When possible, we go to different legions. I've done various jobs in the Legion. I've been a member, standard bearer, vice chairman, welfare, chairman, county committee, county vice chairman, county chairman, county president, metropolitan vice chairman. Then over what the trouble I've had, I've been on the county for about 25 years and I thought it's about time I took it easy and give it up. So I resigned this year.
Now, are you having trouble keeping the Legion going with the aging? Are you aware of the aging?
Oh, membership? Yes. Because what happened?
How's it affecting things?
Well, a lot of places are closing down, but some are surviving because of clubs. But the way they've got around this, because it used to be purely for ex-servicemen and the wives could join a women's section, you could become an associate member. But being an associate member, that means you didn't have any voting rights. So about 2 years ago at National Conference, there was a big hurrah, and then they passed a resolution that it will become one membership Legion. So you don't have to be ex-service. But the difference is, with the one membership, anybody can join it now. But the only difference is, for assistance, You have to be ex-service. That means assistant is if you want to help in furniture, convalescent, a new cooker. Then you have to be ex-serviceman. The associate member can't get it.